This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Actors Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick, the stars of The Producers, will join us in a few minutes. The movie version of the musical opens tomorrow in some cities and around the country later this month. They'll be our main guests this hour. If you have questions for them, you can call now. 800-989-8255 is the number, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. But we begin in Iraq with an update on today's parliamentary elections. Polls around the country closed some 5 hours ago. Turnout was reported to be strong even in Sunni-dominated areas where voting in last January's first nationwide parliamentary election was low. There was a shortage of ballots in some precincts and long lines outside of some polling stations, and in those areas polling was extended by an hour, and violence was reported to be relatively low. We begin in Baghdad, where Time magazine's Baghdad bureau chief Michael Ware joins us. So, Michael, good to talk with you.
It's a great pleasure.
I know you were out walking in several neighborhoods in Baghdad earlier today. What did you see?
Well, I saw a marked contrast across a large part of the city. I firstly went to one largely Shia area, which is relatively safe, and there it was an election day, much of the nature that we would experience ourselves back home. A little further to the west was another Shia area, but much more of a militant zone where the militias of the rebel cleric Muqtada al-Sadr posed a demonstration, yet they too voted. Most interestingly, though, was an area right to the west of the city, nestled close to the largest American military base in the country at Baghdad Airport. The area is known as Amariya. It is, to this day, an insurgent hotspot. It is the community strongly supports the guerrilla fighters. It is a battlefield today between U.S. forces and the insurgents. It's a staging post and an operational center for the insurgents. And today I saw their community, indeed the families of these insurgents, voting en masse. This fits with what the nationalist insurgents called for prior to this election. They said, we're participating, we want our people to participate, and I got to witness it today.
Indeed, most of the insurgent groups had said we need to let the voting go ahead. Al-Qaeda in Iraq did not agree, yet violence was pretty low today.
Absolutely. This is what we see is an enormous dynamic playing out with the insurgency. There's been a shift in the tectonic plates over the last few months. Where Zarqawi and his Al-Qaeda forces very much have had the upper hand in the command and control of the insurgency thanks to money and their fierce zealotry. We've watched, as we've seen, the balance shift back in the favour of the Iraqi nationalists. That's the Ba'ath Party and more moderate Iraqi Islamists. They now can say, we want to engage in this political process. It's been part of their intention from day one, a two-track bullets and ballots strategy. Very classic guerrilla style. They've told Zarqawi, we're participating, you must stand back. So just like we saw on the October referendum day when they participated as nationalists, they forced Zarqawi to stand off, and there was no suicide bombings on that day, nor today.
It's going to take at least a couple of weeks, we're told today, before these ballots can be tallied. There were, though, some questions about missing trucks full of ballots and other concerns over the validity of this election.
Look, there's been enormous concerns about the integrity of these voting processes, both on the original January 30 election, again on referendum day in October, and I'm sure there's much more yet to emerge from today in terms of allegations. I mean, during the January election, I myself saw a number of things that would be considered heinous back in the West, just in terms of the handling of ballots and so forth. However, to what degree it is, as to whether it affects the actual nature of the mandate that might be delivered, I'd be surprised to say that it does. Certainly, we're now entering the real period. Today was just election day. The real carve-up of power is only now about to begin. This was the foreplay. The real main game is only now before us. And this will be, as U.S. military intelligence described it to me, bare-knuckled politics.
Michael Ware, thanks very much for being with us today.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you, Neil.
Michael Ware, Baghdad Bureau Chief for Time Magazine, speaking with us from Baghdad in the Iraqi capital. Let's go now to the largely Sunni city of Fallujah, about 40 miles west of Baghdad, where the Washington Post's Jonathan Finer joins us. And Jonathan, good of you to join us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Turnout in Fallujah was very low back in January when many Sunnis boycotted the elections. How did things go today?
Well, it was a very high turnout. I think in the greater Fallujah area, something like 200,000 plus residents came out to vote, which would be around 90% or more turnout, by far the highest in Anbar province, which is considered the heartland not only of the Sunni Arab population in Iraq, but of the insurgency.
What was security like?
Security was fairly tight, although the interesting thing about it here in Fallujah is it was provided almost entirely, at the polling stations at least, by the Iraqi police. The U.S. Marines who patrolled this city, a battalion of them, stayed. It did not come within a couple of hundred yards of any of the polling stations. They did some light patrolling and set up a sort of a cordon or a perimeter around the city. But aside from that, they left the security to the Iraqi police, and there were very few incidents.
And were you able to figure out what people were talking about as they were on their way to the polls?
Yeah, there's sort of a double agenda that people have here. One, they don't like the government that's in Baghdad. It's a Shiite Muslim religious-led government and wanted to come out to vote to try to prevent a government like that from being elected again. And the other thing they want very clearly, just about everyone we talked to, was for U.S. troops to withdraw from their cities and eventually to withdraw from Iraq entirely. And the only difference was among voters was the timetable for that. Some wanted it to happen immediately. Others said not right away because the security situation doesn't warrant a complete withdrawal, but we do want it eventually.
But did you get a sense that Sunni representation in the national parliament, that this was an important matter?
Absolutely. The thing that I think some leaders in the Sunni community and others worry about is whether or not unrealistic expectations are being created. The Sunnis are still a small minority of Iraq's population. Some estimates place them under 20% of the population as a whole. So even if they do elect representatives in proportion to their share of the population, it's not entirely clear that they'll be able to enact much of an agenda once they get to the legislature. And the concern, I guess, is that once these people who have boycotted politics and are now participating, if they're disillusioned by the fact that their representatives aren't able to bring about the changes that they want to see, the question then becomes whether or not they will stay sort of embracing the political process or turn to other means of resistance.
And Jonathan Finer, give us an update, if you would. Obviously, Fallujah was a city devastated, at least parts of it, during various military operations. Has reconstruction there gotten underway? Has the government been able to provide some evidence of deliver on promises?
Well, it's underway, certainly. There's been more than $200 million spent in Fallujah, about $100 million to reimburse people for damage done to private homes, and another $100 million on various reconstruction projects. But, walking around the city or driving around the city, the evidence, the signs of the invasion that took place a year ago was particularly devastating. It's are still very much in evidence. There are mosques with shattered minarets, houses that look like the roofs have been caved in by bombs. And plenty of the city certainly has not yet been rebuilt, and local leaders say that they think it will be at least another several years and hundreds more millions of dollars before the fully rebuilt city will be realized.
Jonathan Finer, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Jonathan Finer, foreign correspondent for The Washington Post, and he spoke with us from Fallujah in Iraq. And let's go now to the south of the country and to the southern city of Basra, Iraq's second largest city. Douglas Strzok, also with The Washington Post, is there. And nice of you to join us this evening.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Can you tell us what Election Day was like in Basra?
It was pretty quiet. There was no violence to speak of. There was a pretty good turnout for the polls. Southern Iraq, as you know, is a largely Shiite area, and the Shiites here are very anxious to ensure that they select the Shiite religious list to head the next government, to be the largest party in the next parliament, so that they can select a prime minister. The Shiites, of course, were oppressed viciously for many years under the Saddam Hussein regime, and they're anxious for their day in the spotlight, and they consider today the day to ensure that, at least for the next 4 years.
The Shia-dominated alliance, well, they were largely in control of the temporary parliament elected last January, along with their allies from Kurdistan. At this point, is the alliance as strong as it used to be?
Probably not going to get quite the same proportion of seats that it had in the temporary government, mainly because the Sunnis have decided to join this election and has watered down the proportions a little bit. But they're likely, in fact, quite likely, to still be the largest party in the parliament. The secular candidates, there is a battle going on here in southern Iraq. It's not monolithic by any stretch of the imagination. The secular candidates had hoped that secretly, once voters were in the ballot, in the voting booth down here, they would reject the religious candidates and vote for non-religious secular candidates. But there's no indication that that's occurred, at least from the exit polls and from the conversations I've had with people down here. The secular candidates and others who fear the domination of this religious Shiite alliance raise the specter of Iraq, or at least oil-rich southern Iraq, becoming more and more like Iran. And in fact, if you move around Basra, as I did today, you see scenes that look a lot like Iran. All the women are in the black hijabs. The liquor stores have been forcibly closed down. Students who were dancing at a picnic recently by themselves, by the way, were set upon and beaten by religious enforcers. So this is the sort of vision that alarms some people, many people in Iraq, and certainly was not the vision that the Americans had when they invaded this country.
Douglas Strzok, thanks very much. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Douglas Strzok is with the Washington Post, and he joined us from Basra in the southern part of Iraq. Well, when we come back from a short break, we're going to be talking with the stars of The Producers. Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane will join us. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break, it's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.